Possibly one of my biggest waves. Not only that, I also got to witness some of the biggest waves I've ever seen out there. And it's not always the waves that break either that I was so astonished with. It was, we were sitting way farther out than normal, realistically, while you're towing. And there's a bunch of tow teams, there's always this commotion, but there was waves standing up out there that were giant. Like, there had to have been 80-foot walls coming in. And it was interesting to hear too from a lot of the older guys.
So, Allo, welcome back to part two of your podcast.
It's been a while.
It's been
4 years.
4 years, April of 2019.
Long time.
Long time. Very long time. And what I kind of look back at the previous episode we did with you, which is like kind of like the origin story of you taking us through just you as a young kid having these older people around you who you looked up to who were like big wave Mavericks guys, like legit. And then your focus from being a Grom to that time of your life at 17 when you were out there charging.
Yeah, it's come a long way, and I've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy how fast 4 years has gone. But let me kind of land us to the here and now today. We'll talk through like the past few years because there's a lot of really cool things you've been doing, not just with surfing, but just life in general. How many waves do you think you've ridden at Mavericks thus far? If you had to guess.
Ooh. It's got to be in the couple hundreds, I would imagine. Maybe 200-300 waves. If you realistically think about it, sometimes you get one wave per session, or if you're out there for 8 hours, you can get 20 to 25 waves. So I wouldn't say anything higher than 500. But nothing lower than 200. That's my estimated guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard. It's so hard to like quantify that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it is. I was thinking about that for myself too, just surfing. It's like, how many waves do you think you rode the last 5 years? It's like, I don't know.
A lot.
Yeah, you just, you know, some days are good and you get two waves or you get 10 or 20. It's so hard to figure it out.
And that's why we're so greedy too as surfers, because 500 waves, that's a lot of waves.
It is. And you want more. You wish it was twice as much.
Never stop.
So here we are in the winter of like, you know, 2023, 2024. And we're a few weeks out from a pretty insane run of swell. That kind of December of 23 swell was, I mean, you know better. It was really good. And so give me like, start us with like a summary of the winter thus far. And move into like some of the days you had out there, which were kind of being called as semi all time. Some of the days you had.
Mm-hmm. It all started really in October. We had a swell that realistically on the map wasn't showing anything out of the ordinary. And the day we arrived, we kind of were just, everyone's amping. There hadn't been a lot of waves the seasons prior. So that evening, we're kind of sitting out the back and the swell started to move in, and it was big. It was bigger than anything we've seen in the last 4 years, in my opinion. And from there, it kind of just kickstarted all throughout November and December. And a lot of what's been going on, I think, as well, is the buoy readings have been off. They've been saying these numbers that are fairly small, realistically. And when they come in, they're twice as big as what we were seeing, which is kind of cool. If you know. If you don't know, then you're like, what the heck? How is it 25 foot today? It says this buoy reading. But from December, it seemed like it never stopped. It literally was swell after swell after swell. I lived in Half Moon Bay, and I'm only an hour away. So it's not that hard for me to come back and forth, but I just stayed up there. And yeah, I mean, the main swell that we really did have was December 28th. That was what people are calling possibly the century swell.
Right.
It wasn't that it was as tall, perhaps, as the swells in the future, like, or in the past, sorry. But it was so similar to this 100-foot Wednesday that they're always calling in 2007. It was so west, it was almost south. So when these waves were coming in, it was nothing like Mavericks my generation has ever seen. We're novices to that, realistically. I mean, only 8 years out there, it's like nothing.
Yeah.
So when this swell came in, it was a completely different wave. you couldn't read it. You couldn't understand where to, like, there was no channel realistically, which was difficult for boats and jet skis.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of chaos that went down with that as well.
And scary. Your safety zone. Like,
exactly. You're running towards a wave that you would normally think you're like, oh, I'm way out in the shoulder. I'm towing my friend in. And you look back and your guy is 100 yards too deep. You're like, oh, well, time to go get your buddy. But, and not only December 28th was it so west, it seems like the entire weather pattern has been west.
Yep.
And it's odd to see. It's crazy. Like, Oregon has been smaller than it's been in the Central California, which is extremely rare for our winters. And especially, I'm not an expert at that stuff, but in El Niños, I normally think huge north swells that come off the coast from Alaska.
Yeah.
And it's been a wild ride.
Totally. And even today, as we speak, we're getting like a west-southwest swell at like exactly. with size.
Yeah.
Now, it's blown apart, but
yep.
It has been funky. So a couple things to kind of back up towards. You mentioned this first October swell, you're reading the buoys, everybody's psyched because it's basically the first waves of the winter starting fall. You get out there with kind of like, do you have these kind of preconceived notions of the size you're going to be dealing with based on the buoys? But then all of a sudden it's different. And you're like, you're probably happy and stoked, but still you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
I wasn't kind of mentally prepared, but
yeah.
You just move into like the next level of like mental yeah. game for that.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people that were not mentally prepared. I think there was a handful of us out, probably 6 or 7 guys out, all incredible surfers out at Mavericks. And I was riding my board that I would ride when it's really small.
Yeah.
And we got out there and I think it was the buoy readings at one point were 10 feet at 24 seconds.
Whoa.
Crazy long period. And you could see it. We were talking to Grant Washburn when we were out there. And it was interesting to kind of get a read from him because he was sitting a little bit on the shoulder and he goes, you guys, there's backwash coming up the wave. The period was so long. It was sucking so much water off the reef. There was literally a lump coming straight back up the lip of the wave. And I hadn't seen it like that in so long that I was like, what the hell is this? But that evening it kind of glassed off and the period started to drop and myself and Ryan Augustine, I felt like we caught the best waves we've gotten in a long time at that time in October. And we've had very similar swells now in December
yep.
compared to October, but in October we were not expecting that. And the next day was actually supposed to be even bigger. And that's when like the crowd and everybody started to show up and it ended up being smaller.
Wow.
So we were in the right place at the right time. Kind of just looking around like, wow, there's 5 of us out here.
Wow.
And the waves are giant. It was second reef Mavericks every set with a handful of your friends.
Unreal. Totally unexpected.
Crazy. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So a lot of variation in just day-to-day out there.
Yeah.
That kind of keeps you guessing.
Always. You always think that you know what it's going to be like. And then the minute you paddle out, you have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once you're in the mood and like you're in that environment, you can kind of get a read on it, especially being out there for so long. You're like, okay, it's so west. Half these waves are closeouts or whatever the aspect is for that day. But on October, nobody saw that coming.
Right.
I didn't see that coming. We saw waves arriving, but not that big.
Right.
Not even close.
Plus you're a little rusty. It's exactly. been some months, right?
Yeah.
You got your smallish board.
Yep.
You're just like, it's going to be a good warm up. Cool. Yep. Then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, this is like full game on.
Yeah. We were real deal right off the bat. Yeah. I was like, cool.
Here we go.
Which is nice sometimes too. Cause a little bit of an icebreaker.
Yeah.
Like I fell on a few waves and I was like, okay.
Yep. Got that out of the way.
That sucked, but yeah. We can do that again.
Yeah. So then you have this run of swell in between then and leading up through December and that December 28th day. And so that was more of, like you said, massive, way west, looked like a different kind of wave. You didn't know really where to be or what to do, but you mentioned towing that day. And so that was kind of the main thing, right? That was a tow day, like
completely
and totally.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some shots of you getting a super sick one. I mean, did you get one of your biggest waves that day or?
I think so. Yeah. possibly one of my biggest waves. Not only that, but I also got to witness some of the biggest waves I've ever seen out there. And it's not always the waves that break either that I was so astonished with. It was, we were sitting way farther out than normal, realistically, while you're towing. And there's a bunch of tow teams. There's always this commotion, but there was waves standing up out there that were giant. Like there had to have been 80-foot walls coming in. And it was interesting to hear too from a lot of the older guys that they were saying it wasn't the tallest, but if it was angled any more north, the size of the wave would have probably almost doubled because it's hitting the reef and grabbing it. Yeah, and lifting it. But the swell height itself was ginormous. And the concentration of it, because of it being so west, was essentially only towable. There was no way of paddling those waves.
And no way.
No way. And it was cool to hear people, too, that are like strictly paddle guys say there was no way we could have paddled that. And I was like, okay, that makes me feel like the tow day was justice, you know? Like yeah. We had to go out there and somebody had to ride it. And that's the beauty about having those jet skis is you can do that.
You mentioned a learning curve too, where when you're the driver and you're towing your guy in, you're whipping him or her in, is there, feel like there's a learning curve. Cause you said where you think you normally should be in making your turn, you're like, whoa, that thing's got it. It's already walling up. Exactly. My guy's way too deep. So you had to like,
yeah,
unfortunately, yeah, you're paying the price as you learn.
Your buddy's paying the price for your mistake, but it's okay.
Yeah.
We're durable. Yeah. I'm jet ski operating for me has been something that is constantly a learning curve. And I don't think people really realize that until they get on a jet ski and they try and operate and they try to tow with people. There are some people that wanted to try their first time towing at Mavericks and you can tell. Like you can really, really see it. It's like somebody trying to drive a car for the first time with no instruction. You're like, okay, get out of park.
Right.
Yeah. And it takes a long time. Like, I still feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. But you still need to keep doing it to learn from those mistakes. And seeing swells like that, too, though, that are that west is kind of amazing in the sense that that was such a big learning lesson for us that if we get the chance to do that in the next century or whenever it is, hell, it could be next month.
Yep.
You never know. But we'll know what that swell looked like and we'll know exactly how to kind of operate around it in a sense.
Yeah. So take us through, like, you're being towed, gear up now.
Yep.
And you guys are like, just take us through you're spocking waves. There's other teams. You're kind of motoring, hovering, and then you kind of pick one. So take us through like the moment you guys go, okay, that's ours. How does that go? And then you're letting go and just seeing this massive wall stand up, like take us through what that's like.
Yeah, that's another thing in that is having complete trust in your tow partner. Luca is the same age as I am, and he knows the wave, if not better than anybody I know. And even my prior partner, Ryan Augustine, same thing. Those guys are kind of directing you into the area that you want to be. But the beauty about towing is that you have control over the rope. So whenever you want to let go, that's when you can ride the wave. And the more sling and a little more of the push that you want, you can tug on that rope and kind of direct yourself. And your tow partner, essentially what they're looking for is the cleanest wave that's going to draw off the reef, which is extremely difficult to do when you're half a mile at sea. But if you've been doing it long enough, you can see it. You can see it coming out from 2 miles, you're like, okay, here comes the right set. It's going to come from the right direction. Once it hits the reef, you normally want the second or third wave of the set a little cleaner, especially on December 28th. So much wind and chatter from the storms prior. But letting go of that rope, you can kind of direct your own way, which is pretty cool because it's like a lot of people think that, yes, it is solely on your jet ski partner to get you the right wave, but it's also solely on you to figure out which line you're going to take on that wave. So it's cool because it's a dynamic that is really special in surfing, I think, because it's not, it's a team sport.
Totally, truly.
Yeah.
And so you're whipping in, you're doing, you're tugging, you're getting your spot, you let go. And then, like, I mean, you're just seeing this massive mutant wall of water in front of you. I mean, are you thinking, and now you're just adjusting. You're just trying to make it, or like,
yeah,
take us through that. I mean, you're just, it's just pure flow state.
Yeah, exactly. A big thing is speed. Learning how to navigate the wave to continue having speed. A lot of the problem that people do is that they go straight down the wave and then they lose all their speed. You want to snowboard the waves. These tow boards are an inch and some change thick. Mm-hmm. They're thin. They're made to be on rail and continuously going around. I mean, for anybody that knows how to snowboard, if you're not on a rail, you're gonna fall. It's pretty similar with towing. So from there, you want to come, normally for me, I want to come up the face of the wave as much as I can and come back down to generate that most amount of speed. It always depends on the wave, realistically. But yeah, your mind definitely goes into a different kind of oh shit moment, especially if you're not in the right spot. But at the end of the day, you want to be able to kind of hold that line and make it around. And a lot of people kind of hesitate. And don't get me wrong, I've been known to do that plenty of times. But the more you hesitate, I've noticed, and the more you don't just commit to doing that line that you thought of right off the bat, the more you're going to take some gas.
Yeah. Is there an image that stands out in your mind of one of your rides, or just a memory of a certain ride or certain wave?
My wave? No. Because I kind of like black out every time, personally. I remember the wave, but no, none of the really the images.
Yeah.
The images that for me are the craziest is on especially December 28th, towing my tow partner Luca into a wave. When you're on the jet ski, you can ride the shoulder of the lip and the lip as well. And looking down to the left at your partner, it really gives the wave justice. Like, that's probably the one angle that gives Mavericks its extreme justice. And I remember his first wave I towed him into, he let go of the rope and I was like, this wave isn't that big. Like, we hadn't really caught a wave yet. We couldn't see it. Nobody was towing. We were the first tow guys out there. And he kept kind of dropping in, kept dropping in. And I was still on top of the wave. And then I remember looking to my right, make sure I'm not hitting any jet ski guys in the channel, because there's a lot of boats out there. And then I looked back down to my left and he was bottom turning and it looked like an 80-foot wave. And I was like, wow, okay, it's game on. Like, today's the day. And I think that wave, even everybody in the channel saw that and said, okay, game on.
Really? Did it drop out more than you expected? Or
it dropped out like we were talking about, that west swell. Yeah. It looked like an everyday, I mean, not an everyday lump, but a 60-foot lump of water that didn't look like it was going to go top to bottom. It was just going to be like a mush burger. And I was like, okay, cool. There's going to be a lot of those waves today. But right when he got down to the bottom, it drew off like a classic Mavericks wave. And it was way bigger than anything I'd seen in a long time. And that image right there,
yeah,
is definitely stuck in my head.
Did he make it?
He did make it. Thank you. Yes.
Because even for him, he's like, whoa, this thing's real time. He's like,
yeah.
This thing's doing something different.
Yeah, there's a videos of it, and you can tell, like, he's going down the wave, and he's bunny hopping, and he keeps bunny hopping. And then right finally when he gets on rail, the wave is just so tall. And right when he kicked out, he could tell. Like, he kicked out, he went right back onto the rope, and he was like, that was a big wave. I'm like, I know. I watched you. Thanks for not falling.
And so you mentioned Luca, and so this part, one of the aspects of this year has been new, like a new chapter for you up there is like teaming up with him, right?
Yeah.
And so when you talk towing, it's like you have a partner. You've had some amazing legends in your crew, from Pat Shaughnessy to Augie, Luca. Like, you've been super blessed for sure. And, you know, I'm sure each one's got, you know, it's a different relationship and you learn things from these guys and all that kind of stuff. But this year, like, it's kind of different too for you. So how has things changed for you with like a new partnership? Because working out, training, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, how has it changed for you?
It's something special, I think. There's not a lot of people my age that were into doing this in the first place. And we had always been kind of, we've been good, like, friends, but just kind of would see each other in the lineup, and it was cool. We were like, oh, we're the same age. Like, this is rad. But this last year, we kind of talked about it. We were like, it would be insane if we could team up and become a toe partners. And it was hard. Like, people say it's like getting rid of your toe partner is like getting a divorce. You hope it goes well. And I'm really fortunate that Tim, it was his toe partner, and Augie was mine, and they were really encouraging with it, which was rare. It is rare, and they still are encouraging, which is amazing. And so I want to thank them for sure. But we got to do some stuff that I hadn't been, I'm new to. There's the working out, we both love Mavericks. Like, that's all we want to do. And that's all we want to do is ride big waves. And it's just cool. We kind of feed off of each other's energy. And I'm learning a lot from him. And it's funny because he's younger than I am by maybe a couple months. And I look up to him because he's been doing this seriously since he was 12 years old, 13 years old. Which I still want to see the birth certificate because I don't really trust that. Guy had a beard in middle school. I was like, I don't know.
Let's get some verification.
Yeah, I don't trust this guy. But no, seriously, like, it's been a life-changing type of thing. And I think if we continue to do so, we can just build on each other and it can be like a 20-year toe partnership, which is amazing. And yeah. I think that there's not a lot of young people doing that, and it's always kind of like there's the older guy and then there's the younger guy towing, which is amazing because you learn so much from the people that had already done it prior to you. But now we kind of both came in with that information and we're both feeding off of what we know, and I think it's just going to make us stronger.
Yeah, that's cool. Your dad tells this cool story of when you and Luca, I think, were like 13, middle school, you know, surf contest. And I think you're at Waddell, at the Reefs or something. And he tells a story the other day. It was raining and you're waiting for your heats. And you're all in the truck because it's raining and cold. And he was like, I'm sitting there listening to these two young kids just like chickens just talking about Mavericks. Even when they're like 13 or 12 or whatever. He was like, it was even back then, 10 years ago, you know. And so it's really cool that, first of all, you guys had that in your mind that long ago and that here you are doing it, you know, and that you've like developed this like partnership. It sounds like you're now able to like kind of almost innovate beyond. You've had awesome guidance from the wisdom of people older than you who've been through it. Now you're like ready to kind of come together and figure out like what's next.
Yeah. What's our learning curve?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So Luca's goofy foot.
Yep.
He's looking at lefts probably more than you are.
Yep.
So how is that added a different dimension to your surfing? Like looking at the left different as you're towing or paddling or even, cause look, you grew up in Santa Cruz where it's a land of rights.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Lefts are a couple but rare
here and few between. Yeah, for sure.
So has that changed anything for you surfing with him like that?
Yeah, it has for sure. I mean, Augie and I really hunted down the right, and towing the left is, it's interesting to see how he wants to read it as a goofy foot. It's a new learning curve. It's like trying to drive goofy, which is really difficult. Like your head is normally always turned to the left. Like you're always turning to the left. Now I'm turning to the right. Like I got to look down the face of the wave to the right, set my right shoulder. But the left is interesting because a lot of them aren't good waves.
Yeah.
And he knows what those waves look like. And so it's kind of just like a round robin guessing game for me at this time. I mean, until I can read a wave fairly well and kind of can let him know like, hey, this one looks good. But yeah, we've definitely had some close situations on the left that were terrifying, and it's a learning curve for sure, but that left is special, and I think towing that wave is the way that you're going to get the best barrel of your life. And I'm really interested in trying it as well. I've had a couple waves here and there towing the left that were pretty damn special, but nothing like what Luke has been hunting. And I could just hope I can continue helping him with that journey.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Because the left kind of pinches more, right?
Yep. So much more than
not as makeable, right, yeah. As consistently makeable, I guess. Is that one way
to
say it?
It's just like, it's funny. It's a slab. Mm-hmm. And not all slabs, even around the world, every wave isn't great. The direction needs to be right, and the tides and everything. But then it's that finicky wave that all of a sudden a perfect one will show up, and it'll be the worst conditions you've ever seen. You're like, well, okay, we got to go find that one. And it's hard to go find that one wave. But I think if you round robin it and you continue to, you know, put in your time out there, we're going to find that wave.
Yeah, it's going to happen. So again, back to like you guys working together, there's like this element of dedication. It's that I'm sure everybody can sense, but knowing like you talked to your dad, and I know you're up there all the time. You're up there for a month.
Yeah.
You guys are like in the harbor on your ski, suited up like way before daylight.
Yep.
You're in bed early. You're not partying. You're training. You're eating well. Like you're very businesslike because you guys have a focus, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And so how do you think that impacts just your success, performance, et cetera, out there?
Yeah. A ton. I think we've also Luke and I always talk about it. What can we do better the next swell? Not in the water, just readiness. So is it having the skis in the water the night prior, having your wetsuits, where you're going to dry your wetsuits, who's making the cup of coffee, there's all these little checklists that we like to do so that when you wake up at 4:45, you just go into robot mode and you're like, done, done, done. Oh, next thing you know, you're in your wetsuit, in the launch ramp, before anybody. And I think that helps us a ton because there's people that kind of just show up and they're like, oh, okay, like, oh damn, the batteries on the jet skis are dead. You're like, no, make sure everything's set like a week prior, not the night before, even like a week prior. You're making sure all your gear is ready to roll. And I think you're right. It does enhance our performance, and staying there and eating well and all of it really does help. And it's just less weight on your body, way less weight on your body. And I think that's what you need when you're going out to go do this every day for a month.
Yeah. So I'd say also, like, as you're saying, it's like less weight on your mind the day of.
Yep.
So like, to your point, there's no like guesswork, like stuff can happen,
yep.
You know, whatever. But you guys are planning to prevent any like snafus that just knock you off your mental focus of what you're there to do.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And exactly. So that when you just roll through it, then all you're really focusing on is, okay, is surfing versus, oh, we got to hook the trailer up. Oh, dang, do you have the lights aren't working or that kind of dumb stuff, which just takes you away from the focus of what you're there to do.
Exactly. And I mean, we're still learning how to even improve our situation. Like, our main concern right now is when we get in from Mavericks and it's 7 o'clock at night, how can we eat food and be in bed by 8? It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have pre-made food, which goes into another thing. 3 or 4 days prior to the swell, you got to make food or something of the such. But luckily, we have great moms as well, so that always helps.
The support group, the family support group is always nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it, though. There's a, I was thinking about this morning, kind of looking at some YouTube, and there's a cool kind of clip you guys have of just kind of like a day in the life of you guys working together. It's cool. And then thinking about that story I told of your dad when you guys were young. There's a quote I love from the famous Craig Silverback Waltz, which is, it's all talk until it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to talk about all of this.
Yep.
until, and it's just talk until it's really not. And I love that. I love that. It's like my own little, whenever I'm trying to do something kind of cool in the ocean, I always think about that. Kind of see that for you guys. I just love that. You know? Because it's easy to talk this game.
Yeah.
You know, and let people do.
A lot of people do.
You put your money where your mouth is. You know, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It is fun. It's a cool experience.
So you also have been talking about training. You're kind of stepping it up. Like, you've been doing jiu-jitsu. Health's been a big thing for you, you know, and your family growing up. But now you're doing some of, like, the Laird Hamilton training stuff where you're working on the mental aspect, you know, everything. I mean, how is that? What have you been up to with that lately?
It's been pretty cool. I got to spend some time with, fortunately enough, with Luca and Laird in Malibu training. And I've learned more in a week than I have in years. So, I mean, a huge part of that is just breathing, learning how to breathe. And as you know, as a diver, like, that's huge. Like, I was doing everything completely wrong. I'm going to put it out there right now. I had no idea what I was doing. Sure, I watched a few videos here and there. And I was main focus, just like always long distance cardio and just getting that lung capacity as large as I could. But what they taught me was, it's just how you breathe. There's a lot of breathing exercises that it's in from your stomach. It's never from, everyone thinks to rise up all your shoulders, everything, your whole body lifting. No. And it was cool to see them pretty much pick me apart. And I've been able to bring that home and do that a lot here, as well as imply with my own training, with whether it's jiu-jitsu, or I love doing a lot of circuit work. So high intensity, high heart rate stuff, and just bringing that heart rate as high as possible, but bringing it back down and learning how to relax as quick as possible. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting what they've been able to achieve. And a lot of the stuff that we were doing down there was underwater, which is good for our sport. And you can tell, like Luca, you can really tell with somebody like Luca, who he's been doing it for years now, and you can notice the difference. The guy is very calm under pressure in anything. Whether if it's surfing or just anything that we need to overcome, you can see the breathing exercises that he does. They help with everyday life. So
it's so true.
Yeah,
that's so true. And that's one element of, like you said, like the breath hold for free diving and spear fishing, which is kind of, you know, thing I've been focusing on. You can just do it when you're driving your car.
Yep.
In traffic.
Yep.
For 2 minutes.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you're just like, ooh, I'm just more mellow.
Way more relaxed.
Yep. Or you're about to whip into an 80 footer. You probably want to get relaxed a little bit.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the same concept, just different scenarios. But it is. I love the breathing stuff.
And I wish I knew it while I was in school. Because I was like, right before an exam, I would have been doing that every time.
Or going on a date or something.
Yeah, on a date. Like, no, I'll still get nervous with that. There's no way. There's no way.
So you're basically, you know, 8-ish years into your, is that right? No.
Yeah.
Do we say that? Yeah.
Eight years, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And look, all this dedication, hard work, it's also being like, it's being recognized. You know, when you read articles in the paper or like news outlets or Surfer Magazine, it's like your name's there, Luca. It's really awesome to see that transition from, you know, guys whose names used to be, and everybody, there's always a transition, but also, you won a Maverick Surf Award last year.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of the top of the top of the top. Yeah. And so how did that feel? Like, what was your reaction to that? And just like, take us through that moment of...
Funny enough, I did not think I was going to win. So I went to a country concert festival, which is probably a bad idea, retrospect. But I had a great time. The Mavericks, the years prior, would... It was very hit or miss. But Augie and I were extremely on it, in the sense that no matter what numbers we saw, we were going up there. And we were hunting the inside bowl as well out at Mavericks, which is essentially a completely different wave. It's 100 yards inside the main bowl. But being up there continuously and going through the emotions and the jet ski, the early mornings, and I think that's what led us to both winning an award. He got one of the best barrels on the right, on the inside bowl that I've ever seen, probably ever, for in there. And we were kind of fighting for that. We both wanted that barrel on the inside, and he got it, and I'm really, really stoked for him. And then it was even more of a blessing that I got to win Performer of the Year, just because we both put in that hard work. And it was really, really special. And it kind of, it gave me a little juice going into this year. Like, okay, if I can win it once, like, let's go ahead and try and do it again. But with a calculated risk, because you don't want to just be throwing yourself for an award. You want to be doing it because you love it.
Yeah. That's cool. Very validating for you, who's put so much time. It's not like you set out originally to win an award years ago. You love doing it. And that's just a nice byproduct of just your hard work and dedication and just performance, your ability, your skill, you know?
Yeah.
It's really, really, really cool. Hearing it here, everybody was like so stoked. And I remember seeing pictures of you in your festival with Connor and others having to... And like it came through and you're like, where is he? Oh, he's in like Palm Springs or we're in the desert or wherever you were.
Yeah, I got a bunch of FaceTime calls from Luca and like other people are like, you won? I'm like, really? Awesome. Cool. Straight back into the gas fund.
That's great. So yeah, Al, so much like success and just rightfully deserved for all your hard work over the past few years. So your part of your sort of last few years and just your life in general has always been traveling.
Yep.
Like you're a part Italian citizen.
Yep.
Like you speak Italian, you've been all over the place, which is cool. In the last few years, you've been to places like Iceland, you've been to mainland Mex, like Salina Cruz, you've been other trips to Europe. But one spot in particular that this summer you had some sick clips of like mainland Mex at Pascual's, which is like a Porto Escondido style setup, right?
Yep.
So take us through that. Like first, like how'd you pick that? Because it seems like everybody like mainland Mex big stuff's like Porto.
Yep.
And here's this awesome sick place. So how'd you even decide to go there? And then just give us the lay of the land of that place, because it looked really pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that place is extremely special. I had never been there. I've heard about it a lot. I mean, I've watched there's these Bruce Irons videos way back in the day of him down there that looked incredible. And I never even really had it on my radar, but there was a kid that actually lives up here in the winter. His name is Rolando, and he's from down there. And he comes up and surfs Mavericks every once in a while, and he'd always kind of talk to me about it, and I'd see him in passing and whatever. We're good friends, but never really took it seriously. And it was in September of this last summer, and we were just sitting at home doing nothing, going a little stir crazy, I'm sure, because there was no waves also. And he called me and he's like, it's going to be 3 or 4 days of 20-foot plus surf down here. You should get down here. And I called Augie and I'm like, let's go. I'm like, we'll just meet down there. And funny enough, Luca ended up going as well. He was down there and we had a blast. It's a tiny little town in mainland Mexico. There's nothing really around it, besides one of the most incredible beach breaks I think I've ever been to in my life. But yeah, it was like, Rolando's always talked about it as being as that Puerto-esque. And the minute we got there, you could tell it was that Puerto-esque, and it was a Puerto wave without the immense crowds, realistically. Maybe a little less paddleable. A lot of the days we were doing step-offs with the jet skis, utilizing the jet skis, which was amazing because, like you said, the wave count is from 2 to 40. And it's always, for me, it's more fun to get that barrel. It's more, in a sense, lively if you can paddle into it. But after you get 30 barrels with that jet ski and conditions that are that difficult, people change their mind pretty quick. But
I can kind of see that, like watching some of those clips, almost like you can, like your body language kind of changes with time.
Yeah.
Because you're just more like this, you're a little more soul arch because you've been like getting so many.
Yeah.
And you're not like worrying about paddling and then paddling back out. It's almost like I could almost see in your mind, like it's just, it gets easier and more relaxing. You're kind of playful a little bit more.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
I was definitely a little too relaxed on certain waves. I think I blew quite a bit of waves, but live and learn for sure on that one.
But what a different, like, the word juxtaposition pops in my head for whatever weird reason. But like, okay, we're talking warm Mexico water. Yep. We're talking sand.
Yep.
Right? Sandy beach break, kind of A-framey.
Yep.
And then versus here, Mavs, green, cold reef that goes from like, you know, 40 feet down to 60. And you're, you know, like, so very, very different, you know? I mean, how did that feel though? Like, is anybody who's, like all of us, whenever we go somewhere warm to surf, it's just like, oh, it's so good. So how was that? Like taking beatings, but it's warm and it's not as, you know.
It's definitely more relaxing underwater. But for me, I was sweating, like overheating. It would be like overcast. And I was, you look like, I just felt uncomfortably hot, which is not a bad thing to have in retrospect. But I will say, like, I had one of the craziest beatings I've ever had down there. I had this a prototype that I've been working on with O'Neill at the time, this padded wetsuit. And it was just a spring suit, and we'd kind of been fiddling around with it. And I went to go pull into this barrel, and the thing just stretched out to oblivion, and I was nowhere even near coming out of it. And the minute I hit the water, it had blown the spring suit completely off of my body, and I was butt naked somehow. I don't know how this happened. It was so violent that it was hanging onto my foot. And I just had the wetsuit hanging onto my foot. And I remember the axle, my driver at the time down there, came in to come get me. And I was like, one more round, dude. I'm butt naked. I'm not getting on. But that wave actually shocked me. I was like, wow, okay. I just got really, really beat in a short period of time. But it was as violent.
Yeah.
As Mavericks or any of the waves that I've really surfed. But like you said, that warm water definitely keeps you looser and much more agile compared to here. When you fall, you're stiff and you're just holding on for dear life in a sense.
Yeah. So yeah, that's crazy. Like just such a massive, massive set of violence that just tore this thing off you.
Yeah. Just, it was so fast. It was literally like, the second I touched the water, it filled my entire suit up with just sand and just foam and like everything. And next thing you know, I was like, oh, I'm feeling a little more free under here.
Hey, any extra trunks in the, on the ski?
Yeah,
no, that's cool. So, I mean, going forward, more warm water stuff like that, like more mainland mechs or other places kind of spocking? Or is it tough to try to do both, like have your focus here in your home break? I guess it's a different season, like the summertime, you can kind of change focus. But do you see more of that for yourself?
I do. I'd love to go explore that wave, and especially in mainland Mexico more. But for me, I actually don't mind wearing a wetsuit. I like wearing a wetsuit. It's pretty nice. It's a level of protection and flotation. But I've been kind of looking to Jaws and a lot of those waves kind of in the same weather patterns that we have for in the winter here. But kind of anywhere there's a big wave. Like, I'd just really like to travel around and go see other big waves. I mean, realistically, being at UCSC for these 4 years in college, I wouldn't say limited my surfing, but it limited the travel of the surfing that I would go do. And COVID, and there was million things that happened in the, but I mean, I'm blessed with that because I could surf Mavericks every time it broke. It was 45 minutes from my house. So yeah, now that I'm out of that a little bit of restriction, I think now I'm going to probably start traveling, go find those waves around the world, or just go to the existing ones that I've looked up to since I was 8. So
yeah, that's great. A little more freedom. A lot more freedom, actually.
Yeah.
You don't have class and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, how cool. So, like, how was that during, so we're talking UCSC, which is, you know, University of California here in Santa Cruz. So it's like, you know, it's a great institution, great school. I'm sure there were times when you had, you know, full load of classes because you got done, I think, in 4 years. Yep. So you're cranking through it.
Yep.
Not a lot of room to just chill and, like, you know, mess off. But there's, like, a couple of days of swell and you had school. So, like, were there times and you were just, like, balancing both?
Yeah. Luckily, I had quite a bit of very, very nice professors that understood that I was like, hey, I won't take any sick days, but I'm going to take my sick days when there's waves. And they were really understanding with that. But there were times like, hey, you got a midterm. Sorry. Like, we're not going to extend your midterm time just so you can go surf. Especially for somebody that's never, like, there's people up there from the East Coast. They're like, yeah, right. Like, have fun with that. But, yeah, there was times where it got tricky. I mean, there was many sessions up there that I was in class on the jet ski. Just headphones in 2 hours. And then I would just jump back out and go surf, which is really nice. Due to the fact that COVID had everybody online. But there were days when there was class in person and you didn't look at the camera. You didn't look anywhere. There was 2 days that I did have midterms that were really good at Mavericks. And I remember I didn't even surf in town because I was like, I don't even want to look at the ocean.
Total absence.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Today I'm not surfing. I'm not even going to look at the ocean. But it is a bummer that it is, the campus is one of the most pretty viewpoints in all of Santa Cruz. And you look over the whole bay. So yeah, you see the lines. Yeah. And you're like, no, just let me go, please.
But, torture.
Yeah. Straight torture. But it's okay. It's life.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. Almost like being at work, but even worse, because school, you can definitely blow off. Work, you can't blow off too much. Or
exactly.
There's penalties
exactly
for that.
Exactly.
Cool. So one of the other big things in the last few years, actually this or last year in 2023, is you mentioned kind of COVID. Like, you've been part of, you know, all of our families or friends. We've grown up, and it's been awesome seeing you from just a Grom and, you know, other Connor and Kyle and some of the others. It's all around. It's so rad to see. But a big part of, like, our kind of, you know, family friend group has been based around paddleboarding.
Yep.
You know, and we're talking like prone paddleboarding.
Yep.
Primarily. and we had a race here, the Ghost Rider Waterman Club, and we've talked about it on this podcast many times. I've had a bunch of those guys, Zach and Trike, on here. But with COVID, it was like you couldn't do anything. Couldn't do a paddle race because people didn't want to hang out on the beach together. Yeah. So it kind of just deflated, right? Yeah. We got lazy, but you picked it up. You, Connor, a couple others just kind of like resurrected what you could argue is one of the most well-known paddleboard races in California. You have the Catalina Classic. That's legit. But we've been doing this here for a good, like, almost 15 years, if not the race, the actual course. But so take us through it. I mean, like, what kind of drove you to, because putting a paddleboard race on is not easy.
No.
Coordination.
Yeah.
It's tough. But first, like, what drove you to do it? But then also talk about, like, why that course, not the race, but also just that paddle is, like, kind of special to you as well.
Yeah. What drove me to really do it was the fact that we grew up around it and it had disappeared. Like you had said, Connor and your son Kyle, we were always around that race. Even if we weren't doing it, we were boogie boarding in the sand. Like, we were always somehow involved. And I missed it. I was like, I really did enjoy doing that race. It's for a good cause. It's for the Junior Lifeguards, Santa Cruz JG's program. And what I really missed about it as well was bringing everybody together. Like, there's people from up and down California, as you mentioned, or even out of the state that come down and do that race. And it's familiar faces that we all enjoy being around. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into when we first got into it. And I thank you, Connor and Karina and the moms, especially, because the moms, they cracked the whip for sure. But it was a lot of work. And I'm excited to do it and continue doing it. And it's a learning curve for anything in life. But the essence of the race itself was really special to me, just seeing everybody come back together. And a lot of people saying it was their favorite race. And not only for the people, but also it's a beautiful course. We start in Davenport Landing, just north of Santa Cruz. It's 14 miles of downwind paddleboarding with essentially stretches of coach where you don't see anybody for miles. It's insane. Like, there's not a lot of other places that I've ever paddled that is that pretty and that enjoyable. Don't get me wrong, the 14 miles is long. It hurts mentally and physically. But I'd rather be doing that than out in the middle of the ocean where you can't see left, right, anywhere, no landmarks. You're enjoying yourself. You're riding waves. And then the minute you get to land, there's everybody that you want to talk to. It's not like the crazy race where it's what's your number, yeah, like screaming at you. Like, no, we just, then you're done. You hang out, we eat some food, and that's it.
Yeah, it is. The community aspect I miss too. And I appreciate you taking it forward, because it kind of got us older guys kind of re-excited about it again too. We just couldn't get the inertia going. Like, who's going to start it? Nobody did. So it kind of fell off the map, and you've kind of got the wheels turning. So thank you for that.
I appreciate, no, thank you guys. you guys started it in the first place. It's amazing.
So one of the cool things about it, and kind of tying, you're like a 14-mile prone paddleboard race, but we do have stand-up and other craft too. It's, you know, a couple hours, and depends on the course. It could be 2.5, or if you're fast, like a Pat Shaughnessy or somebody, or trike, it's, or even you, it's like 2. It could be 3 to 4 for some people.
Yeah.
But it's cold.
Yep.
It's unnerving a lot of the time if you let your head go there, because you're like a half mile off, maybe closer, but you don't see anybody.
Yep.
Even though there might be 80 people paddling it, it's inevitable you are going to be by yourself at
you're
some
on
point
your own
in time. Yeah. You know, and knowing the things that are swimming out there.
Yep.
But there's also like that mental game behind it and the physical, right? So like, and you've grown up with it. Like your dad, John, is just like, I give him so many props. He's like, hey, I'm going to downwind today by himself from 5 mile. Like he's on it, which is rad. And you grow up with that. You've paddled the bay. You've had a lot of that. So just tie that kind of the mental game and the physical game of paddling at distance to like surfing Mavs.
Yeah.
It seems like there's some overlap there.
There is for sure. And like we just mentioned, at 14, I paddled the bay. And that was definitely one of the most mentally challenging things I had done at the time. Just, that's a brutal paddle. And that same year, I got to surf Mavericks, which was pretty special at 14. Pat had taken me out right then and there, kind of that same winter. But I was, the thought process was, if I could do that, then I can do this. And it's not always the case of the such, but Mavericks is a, for me, it's a 50-50. It's a mental and it's a physical game. And paddling is the same thing. You can get in your head real quick paddling. Like if you want to break down and just be like, I'm done, you can sit up on your board and sit there for a long time. And I've done that. I know. And my dad, he's always had that mindset of just don't stop. Because the minute you stop, that's when you get in your own head and it's over. And so I credit to him a lot of that. Even whatever we were doing, he, beach workouts, running, anything. He was like, don't stop. Just don't stop. And you can take that into paddling and into big wave surfing. And I think that we would do these long paddles all the time. And that mindset kept coming up, like, you got to stop. You got to stop. And we'd keep pushing through it. And that started to go into big wave surfing, the same thing. So I think that's the special part about paddling, that people get so worn down, you find your true self.
Yeah.
And I actually tend to like that now, which is for some people crazy, but for others, it's like they understand.
Yeah, I love that. And I agree. And I'd add one piece to it too, after having done that stuff and long distance things, is it's that race, like Davenport's interesting and challenging, because you're not paddling with the boat right next to you. There's nobody throwing you granola bars when you're ready. You're by yourself. Now, granted, it's let's call it 2 to 3 hours.
Yep.
And then you can see land. But a lot of times you're like, dude, there's no way I'm going to get up that cliff. Like, it's inaccessible, even though it's there, right?
Yeah.
And one aspect of that, which sounds to some like you're insane, but one of the reasons why I like that versus like an escort boat next to me for a long thing, which still, you got to have your game on tight. You don't want to just bail and get in the boat and take me in.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you got to handle it top to bottom by yourself.
Yep.
There ain't nobody else out there.
Nobody's
there. Or maybe there's somebody 100 yards away, but still, it kind of doesn't matter.
But they're racing.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of equate that to all the stuff we do in the ocean. I sure see you, like, some point in time, there could be 6 skis and dudes everywhere, but you're gonna have to handle your stuff by yourself.
Yep.
It's the same kind of concept.
Exactly.
And so I just love that. Even when, like, I'm out fishing by myself way out there, it's like, hey, you got to be self-reliant. That's, I think, what it comes down to. And that's one of the things I love about paddling in general, but also out there, where you're just like, I got to handle this.
It's true. There could be, you flip a jet ski and there's 100 jet skis out there, and yep, for some reason none of them are going to come get you. You're on your own.
Yeah.
But it, like you said too, another aspect of that is when you're underwater at a Mavericks wave, you're on your own. Somebody might come get you when you come up, maybe, but you're still on your own.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. That's the element of, like, the ocean in general, which I love the most, which is it. The camaraderie is insane. Doing it with other people, absolutely. But there's times when it just, you just go raw dog solo.
Yep.
Paddling for a couple hours is that time. You don't want to do it all day and night, because but that 2 hour stretch or three, you're just like, this is burly. And there's times when, you know, when it's nuking wind, and there might be somebody 20 yards away, you have no idea because it's so steep.
Yeah, you can't see
anything. And there's sometimes big toothy things flying out of the water, or a seal being eaten, and you're just, it's like a different deal.
It's a different aspect, yeah.
It's rad.
Even the sound out there when you're paddling and you're by yourself and it's just the wind and it's the ocean, it's not something that you can really like comprehend in any other way.
Yeah
And I think that is special too. It's probably, it's got to be beneficial for your health too. Totally. If you're out there with just silence.
Yep.
So
agreed. Cool. So then, looking forward, there's a couple things, like, tell me if this is true. So we finished college, is like that phase of life.
Yep.
That you're, you know, it's here, back of your head. There's this new world of, really, with like being partnering with Luca and the training and the surfing, that's also like the sky's the limit ish.
Yeah.
So, like, looking forward, what do you have any big goals or big things that you are working towards or really think about trying to achieve?
For me, I think right now I'm in a little bit of a grace period where I would really like to pursue the big wave surfing aspect of life, but I'm also going to go try and get my master's in business online. Just with the aspect of surfing, it can come down real quick, and I'd like to have that backup plan. And I do enjoy going to school. And if I can do it online and continue to try and travel the world and get those bigger waves and enjoy my life while also getting an education and having that backup plan for when I do, or if I ever do, need to stop, then the reality is that I have that aspect of life that I can go start my own business or do anything of the such. But for now, I think chasing big waves, hanging out with the people that I do love and enjoy being around, and going to school is kind of like what's in the future.
Solid. I love it. So that's rad. Now, the surfing aspect, yes, Mavs is just, of course, like dead on. But if you could just pick a place that you haven't been to, a Jaws, a Nazare, a who knows what, the Western Oz slabs that are just like, what is that? Like, what would you go for? What would you do?
I don't know, because that's a tough question, because I don't want to go to all of them. But I think going to Portugal is definitely on my high radar. But Jaws is probably the pinnacle of trying to get over there and learning that wave. It's tough that Jaws is normally right in time with Mavericks, but you can get those red-eye flights and make it over. But then again, it goes back to our discussion where you're not in that checklist. You're not staying there. You're not in Half Moon Bay 2 days prior. You're just showing up and blowing up. That's pretty much. And it feels, it'll be weird for sure for us. And I know Luca's experience with it, but he knows. He's like, it's tough. But I think going to Jaws is the number one achievement for me. And just going to go see it. I don't need to go get the biggest wave ever and just have fun. I just know everybody says that wave's insane, and I'd like to go see it with my own two eyes.
Yeah, rad. I bet you will soon.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Well, Al, it's been fun. It's been great catching up. And again, I admire the focus you've had on this for so long, because it's really easy to like talk and then just be like, kind of half, not half-assed, but you know, in it and out, because there's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of other things that, especially being in your young 20s, you can get distracted by, which is cool. But you maintain that focus, which is rad, and it's so cool to see it pay off.
Yeah,
you know?
I appreciate it.
So kudos to you, man. Yeah. Really cool. And I'm so psyched to see what the next few years holds, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I'm excited as well. And it's been a crazy already a few weeks, and I can't even imagine what the rest of this winter or years to come can really become. So time to take some deep breaths and get ready.
That's right. Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Josh.